These days, everyone who has a mobile device can take great photos and shoot videos, showing up all the time on Flickr, Instagram, Facebook, and a host of other social media sites. You point your phone and shoot a picture. Sometimes it's a hit, and many times it's a miss. So what separates the amateurs from the pros? For over 125 years, Dodd Camera has assisted photographers, both professional and amateur, with state-of-the-art cameras, lenses, lighting and darkroom equipment, and class instruction. You can learn about new equipment from their blog or attend one of the many in-store events. The folks at Dodd Camera are helpful, professional, and experienced. They'll take the time to answer your questions and give you advice you can use. You may go to doddcamera.com to find out more. And finally, we wish to thank Dodd Camera for sponsoring the Outspoken Cyclist podcast.
Time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and this is our show for June 9th, 2018. You know, when listeners ask, I answer. And this week, in answer to a request for a new conversation with Grant Peterson, voila, your wish is my command. In a somewhat lengthy chat, Grant and I discuss the state of the industry. He doesn't really have anything negative to say about it. Grant hints at the new bike he will introduce in early 2019, talks of Rivendell's foray back into the mountain biking scene with no suspension, go figure, and we talk about disc brakes. I know you really are totally surprised by that. Grant and I do go back a long way, back to the days of Bridgestone and very, very early Rivendell. In fact, he and I marvel that we aren't any older, yet our kids are all grown up. Seriously, it was really good to catch up with him. Grant will be with me in a moment. So in addition to listeners giving me inspiration for new conversations, I sometimes receive a request to connect on LinkedIn. I rarely receive a request on LinkedIn from an active pro racer, though. So when a couple of weeks ago, a request from TJ Eisenhart, who's currently riding and racing for Hulawesco Citadel, came in, I accepted it right away. It isn't just that he's a pro rider. It was what TJ said and how he said it that caught my attention. He may only be 23, but he's an old soul and he doesn't think or act like a 20-something. He knows what he wants and he goes after it. He started racing at the age of 11 and he's never looked back. He won his first national race at the age of 12. He finished high school early so he could get himself over to Europe. And on it goes. TJ will be with me in the second half of the show. You know, looking at the two interviews for today, I couldn't imagine two more polar opposite people in some ways. And then again, maybe they have more in common than we might think. Here's my conversation with Grant Peterson from Rivendell Bicycles. Hi, Grant. Welcome back to the Outspoken Cyclist. How have you been?
Oh, thanks for having me back again, Diane. I've been okay.
You know,
life is good.
Life is good, you know. My listeners have been asking for me to speak with you again, so here we are.
I have a hard time believing that, but okay.
No, it's true. I would say I can send you the emails of people. Actually, people contact me on our Facebook page when I ask, well, who would you like me to speak with? Well, have you ever talked to? And I'm like, yes. So I replayed our original conversation from, I think it was 5 years ago recently. Mm-hmm. And now I said, you know what? That's stupid. Let's just catch up now. So here we are, right?
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wonder what they want to hear.
Well, let's find out. So, well, you know what? We're going to make it up as we go along. So let's talk about Rivendell. I mean, that's your company. And I like, of course, have always liked the things you say. I mean, I was a Bridgestone dealer back in the day. One of the things that you and I have agreed upon that the market has not agreed upon until recently is cantilever-style brakes and wide tires. Can we talk about that?
Well, road racing was so influential for such a long time. So I assume you're talking about on roadish bikes, not on mountain bikes.
Yes, I am talking about roadish bikes, right.
And, you know, eventually things will get sorted out and settled in, and more people will figure out that a slightly bigger, slightly softer tire is more comfortable for riding, and we get more and more away from, I guess, racing influences. You know, but even then, you know, it's almost as though they can't move there independently, you know, without a movement or some sort of thrust behind it, like gravel grinding or something, you know, which I'm all for, you know, but it just seems like so few individual riders will make the move to a wider tire, cantilever brakes, or whatever, without hopping on some freight train that's going in that direction. Anyway, but those freight trains are important, and they're good, and they're useful, and they lead to other things. They lead to, independent riding, and they help people discover things that they might have a harder time discovering by themselves because there are other influences pushing them in other directions.
I get what you're saying, that if they didn't see other people riding fat tire bikes with cantilever brakes, meaning, you know, 32 millimeter tires, I can remember fighting with people to go from 23 to 25. And they're like, yeah. Oh, no, I can't ride 25 millimeter tires. All my buddies will laugh at me. And now 25 seem really, really skinny, right?
Yeah.
Right.
I think 28 seem pretty skinny. I mean, yeah, I hear that stuff. I know it exists. I've definitely been able to relate to it at all. I mean, the idea of not getting a peer group approval, I mean, I didn't care about that when I was in fifth grade.
Right. You know. Gee, Grant, I never would have known that about you. Right? Right.
Yeah.
It's true. You've always been sort of an outlier.
Well, you know, for a long time, you know, I probably started when I would go hunting in the hills behind my house. And we lived in like a residential area, and I would take my shotgun, empty, broken open, by myself, 10 and a half years old, walking up the street in fine, safe, approved form for handling a gun around other people. So everything was perfectly good, but the gun was visible, and I'd hike up in the hills, and I'd go hunting, and I'd shoot a few birds, and I'd come back and walk down the street, and, you know, the neighbors would sort of be aghast, but we were, you know, a liked family, but they would still maybe, well, not maybe, but they would complain to my dad a little bit about that, and my dad said, he's my son, he can do this. And so I had the support for being a little bit off the main road or something.
Independent?
Yeah.
Can we use independent? Well, I think that's an interesting perspective. It sort of colored the path that you've taken right along, that, you know, you're doing your thing. Is that what inspired some of the creativity that came through in the Bridgestone line? I mean, I know people still covet their catalogs, but I know people who still ride their bikes. Their X01s and their X02s and their X...
Yeah.
Yeah, those were some remarkable bikes. And I think the market seems to be sort of trending back that way again. Did you expect that?
Well, I think it's not surprising because those kinds of bikes make a lot of sense. I know that when we first showed the X01 at a trade show, the dealers would go there and they couldn't just look at the bike and see, okay, well, it has inch and a half wide tires, side pull brakes, funny handlebars. And they couldn't just look at the bike and see what it has and figure out what it was good for. They wanted to know what kind of bike it was. Like, they wanted to know, well, it's not a mountain bike. It's not a road bike. Is it a hybrid? You know, they couldn't deal with it unless there was a category to it. And that never, I mean, it drove me nuts. I think you should be able to just look at a bike, look at the clearances, look at the tires, look at the brakes, look at the gearing, look at the position it puts you in. You know, just look at the bike as a bicycle and say, okay, well, I'm going to be able to do this with this, or it's going to be good for that. But, yeah, it was not well received. And the interesting thing is that, like, in now 27 years later now, that bike is more popular than it was when it was new. And when it was new, it was not popular at all. You know, we had, the first year that we made them, I think we made 900 of them, and at the end of that year, we had about 400 left. And considering that we had 300 dealers in the country and we sold 500 of those bicycles in 1 year to 300 dealers, it's pretty pathetic for a bike that, you know, in 2018 is so popular or well known. But, you know, we could not get rid of those bikes.
Well, I did my best.
Well, thanks.
We actually sold quite a few of them. I can remember one family buying five of them from us.
Oh, my gosh. Well, then you have the world record.
We do have the world record. Let me take a moment to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Grant Peterson. You could say Rivendell, but Grant sort of stands on his own. You know, people who understand the kind of things that Grant does have so much respect for him and his thinking, as do I. Let's talk about some of your frames, today's frames, the frames you're building at Rivendell today. You're talking, I see a lot of your frames are using 650B tires. And I think that the way you look at sizing and tires is pretty much in line with what I think, that you're going to use the size tire that works for the size bike.
Yeah. Yeah.
What a concept, right?
Yeah.
So, what are the popular frames today for you? What are the models that seem to be selling for you? Not necessarily purpose, but you have to name your models, and you have done that. You have some cool names, actually.
Well, we've got a crazy name coming up, but I'm not going to reveal it yet.
Oh, no! I wanted to be the first. Okay.
Well, you know, I'll think about that as I'm answering the other questions. It's possible that I could, and that would be sort of a good gauge on how many people listen to the show, because if it doesn't go anywhere else, and the only way that they would know it is if they listen to the show.
Wow.
But anyway, so
okay.
Yeah, we have, I don't know, 7 or 8 models. We have an A, Homer Hilson, a Sam Hilborn, a Clem Smith Jr., the Atlantis, 2 road bikes. One is a Rodeo, the other is a Rodini, a Cheviot named after a sheep. And, yeah, and I don't know, probably, oh, and a Joe Appaloosa named after a horse.
You also have a tandem that sort of
looks
like Hubba.
Hubba Hubba, named after your old bike shop.
Brian will get such a kick out of that. We still ride a tandem together. I looked at it yesterday, and I'm like, no way. Yeah, that's awesome. Well, and it's interesting because as you look through the site, you see all these cool head badges. And I'm kind of into the head badge thing. What's interesting is you're not just saying it's a Rivendell head badge. It is bike specific.
Yeah.
Which is very different.
Yeah, well, you know, somewhere on the badge it says Rivendell Bicycle Works or RBW or something on all the things. But I don't know whether this was a good idea, but it's what we sort of started off with, and just giving each bike its own identity and trying to, you know, say somewhere on the bike that was made by Rivendell. Yeah, but they all have names. And, you know, that way someone can, I mean, I guess in retrospect it makes sense because you can talk about a specific bike and not like, well, it makes it easier to talk about any given bike if, you know, or that bike has side poles, that has cantilevers, that's for touring or whatever.
How do you say the name of the one bike? Hunkapillar?
Hunkapillar.
Oh, yeah. I got it right.
Hunkapillar, yeah.
That's a cool looking head badge. And yet, so when you, what's the other thing that's really cool, when you mouse over the head badge on the site, you actually get to start to see the frame. And you still have fabulous colors on your bikes. They're so nice. They're so mellow.
Oh, thanks, Diane. Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome, Grant. I love all this stuff.
You know, the best colors on anything, I think, you know, like the cars from the 1930s and 40s.
Right. Right.
And, you know,
retro.
I'm not really a car guy or anything, but I've seen pictures of them and I've seen them in real life in car museum and stuff, and I can never quite get exactly the shade or remember it. And so I just try to go through the Pantone book and look at the PMS numbers and try to get something close. And Volkswagen has a really nice mustardy, sort of a pearly mustardy color now. And I would love the bike, but I can't quite get it. And,
you know, there's a museum here in Cleveland called the Western Reserve Historical Society. I think, no, it's the Crawford Auto Aviation Museum. And you could see all those old bikes here and all those colors, like that turquoise from the Edsel.
Colors.
Yeah.
Colors that were just sort of muted and soft and playish greens and blues.
Right,
And, you know, they often had, you know, details that I like, just like combinations of cream and gold and black, you know, things that I think of as like a billiard ball colors and stuff, things just really nice in as main colors and then as accents. And so we try to get those on the bikes. We have a fairly rigid palette when it comes to color details and accent colors that seems to work.
I like that. All right. So, you know, I ask everybody this question and I'm pretty sure I'll know the answer. What's your take on... And then again, I could be wrong, right? What's your take on disc brakes?
In the new catalog, you know, we have a page that sort of addresses that. You know, disc brakes are better in when it's icy or really abrasive and gritty. And they're probably better if you're riding a loaded tandem down a long descent and you can't stop and let the rims cool off for anything. So, you know, they have their place and they are better at some things. But there's also a lot of, they're misrepresented and misunderstood a lot too. And for instance, okay, I'll talk about how they're misrepresented. People have the impression that, oh, they're used on cars and motorcycles, so if they work on those, then of course they've got to be ultra super duper for bicycles. But cars and motorcycles weigh so much and they go so much faster. So a rim brake, I mean, how could you even do a rim brake, you know, on a car or a motorcycle? You couldn't do it and the rim would heat up. But a bicycle is a light, sprightly, frail little thing, and it doesn't go that fast even at its fastest. And so rim brakes make sense, and they also are more powerful because when you brake at the rim, you're braking with a longer lever against the rotating force of the wheel than you are with a disc brake, which has a small little rotor on it, you know, 180, 200 millimeter rotor. And when you look at sports cars or any cars, you know, or motorcycles or cars, you know, you can see the disc brakes, and on the more powerful, on the faster cars, they have bigger disc brakes because they understand that if you want to stop a rotating wheel, you don't grab it near, you don't brake near the center of the hub because that's the least leveraged part of the wheel, and it's harder to brake it. It's harder to brake with so little leverage. So a rim is effectively a disc. It's just a larger diameter disc with a longer lever. And it's you know, any given force, braking force on the rim is going to stop the bike or slow the bike more than the same force would on a small diameter rotor. And that doesn't mean the people who ride disc brakes are stupid. It doesn't mean that they're wrong and I'm right, or the other way around as far as that goes. But we are a small company. If we were a big company, we would have to go with the trends. We're a tiny little company. We may be kind of a well-known tiny little company, but we still are small. And one thing that I get to do is make these calls. You know, I don't feel any obligation to go with something that's popular if it doesn't strike my fancy. I think, hey, my company, I can do what I want. So,
and I love it.
And I want to be able to do that without making, without criticizing other people who don't agree with me. But, you know, you did ask the question, so I tried to answer it, and I hope I answered it respectfully.
I thought it was a fine answer. Can you stay with me? We're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back. Hang on.
Okay.
You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
Okay, we're back. And if you are just joining me, I am speaking with Grant Peterson, Rivendell Bicycles. And if you missed the first half of our conversation, rewind. Go back and listen again. Download the podcast. Start over. It's really, really interesting, I think. From your perspective, do you think that the bicycle industry is helping to get more people out riding?
Well, I'm not that in tune with what is going on outside our little bubble here. I know that there are advocacy organizations and there's something called Bikes for People, and there's various other organizations who are doing good work and trying to do good work, and that are some combination of effective and flailing and desperate, but you know, not in a Keystone Cops way. I mean, they are working on behalf of bicycle riders, people who want to become bicycle riders, and manufacturers and dealers and everything else, you know, because the bicycle is a wonderful thing, and if more people rode them, I guess, you know, it would only be good. There's no drawbacks to them. So, you know, I can't as a sort of a passive advocate critique anyone else's attempts at making things better when I'm sitting here not really maybe doing my part. But I think I can still come up with a better answer than that, or at least I can do another little bit of it. I can have a different take on it. And that is that I think that for a long time, the way the bike industry was getting people on bikes was focusing on racing and the glory and the equipment and the shoes and the high-techness of the bikes and Lance Armstrong or, you know, whoever else it was. And maybe that did sell a lot of bikes. And it sold a lot of bikes, but it didn't. That's sort of a riding style. Works for some people, and some people can sustain it. But a lot of people just get discouraged. I think, you know, when they say they're approaching 45 or something and they want to get on a bike because they want to get a little bit healthy and they don't want to run, they don't necessarily want to go to the gym, they don't want to do yoga or whatever else. So they get on a bike because it's in the media and it seems to be really fun and everyone knows how to ride a bike. So they go to a bike shop or consult their friends, or everybody knows somebody who rides a bike as an enthusiast, and they end up getting the whole getup, you know, the fancy bike, the fancy shoes, the fancy clothes, and then they join a club and they go out on these rides with a bunch of enthusiastic riders who may even regard them as, oh, here's a new racer in the pack that I can beat. And I just think that there's too much emphasis on fitness, speed, and the whole racing and racer look and lifestyle. And I think that's a dead end. And I think that the bike industry invested heavily in that for decades. And what has happened? You know, I don't know whether ridership has gone down. I know that bicycle sales have certainly not gone up. And now we're in a situation where if the goal, I'm not saying it should be, but let's say if the goal is to support the bike industry, support manufacturers, support the independent bicycle retailer, then there has to be a better way than turning middle-aged people into fake racers and making them feel bad when they can't be as fast as their riding partners or as the pros or as the really fast people, and just changing their whole persona. I think that right now there is a counter movement to that, and that's with city bikes and bikes with baskets and fenders and utility bikes and riding around the city. I think that has now become sort of a counter movement to the racing movement, and I think that is super positive. And I think that's a healthier direction. And whatever, however little or much hope I have for the continuation and the health of the bike industry, the commercial end of the bicycle industry, I think that's probably where the hope is going to lie, in getting regular people riding bikes with regular clothes on at regular speeds for utility and fun that has nothing to do with speed and racing and sweat and discomfort and pecking order.
Once again, let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Grant Peterson from Rivendell Bikes, and we're going to call him Philosopher Grant right now. But I don't disagree. I think that's really good. Where do e-bikes fit into that? Do you see e-bikes as a category, a good category?
I'm trying to get into the habit of calling them e-motorbikes, because they are motorbikes.
That's
and
true.
So are they more motorcycle or are they more...
Well, pedal assist.
Pedal assist. And, you know, I don't know whether it even matters, but I think that the cycling infrastructure, and it's a boring word, but by that I mean the facilities that are allocated to support and accommodate different kinds of bicycles or bicycles in general, I don't think they're ready for a huge influx of e-bikes, because e-bikes can't ride on the road with cars. They can't take up a car lane the same way that bicycles can't. I mean, if they can't go fast enough for the cars, they're limited to, 28 miles an hour or something like that. And so that rules them out of any car lane with a speed of more than that. But, you know, I think, you know, they aren't allowed to do that, and yet they have more mass and more energy and more speed than bicycle riders. So I just hope that there aren't collisions between e-bike riders and regular bike riders. And I think that for every e-bike that replaces, and I'm falling into the e-bike thing because I don't want to make too big a deal about this e-motorbike thing, but for any one of these new vehicles, these motorized bicycles, and they do have motors on them. So are they a bicycle? I don't know. They aren't the bicycle in the traditional sense of a bicycle. But I think for every time that they replace a car on the road, I think that's good, because they're lighter, they pollute less. And that's the good that they can do. For any time that they replace a bicycle on the road, I'm not so sure it's good. But this is such a a volatile topic because there are people who can't ride bicycles, you know, for whatever reason, or it doesn't make sense for them to, I guess, you know, do people still wear suits when they go to work these days? I did that for 3 months of my life, but, you know, some people have to wear suits and they can't wear suits and ride a bike 10 miles to work in the rain or something, so they need a car, and I don't think that e-bikes are going to, I don't know how much they're going to replace cars, but for whatever fondness I have of e-bikes, it's due to their potential to take cars off the road. And for any fear that I have about them is due to their potential to take pedal bikes off the road. And I understand that there are people whose lives are made a lot better because of e-bikes, and I'm all for that, and I'm not against e-bikes. I just have really heavily qualified support for them. I read in a trade magazine that the head of retail for Specialized, or I think it was that, said that in 5 years, by year 2023 or something, that 30 to 40% of bicycle sales were going to be e-bike sales. And that was kind of a depressing thought, but everyone is sort of gearing up for that. And it's not going to happen here. It's not going to happen here. I mean, we're just going to do the pedal bikes, and if it sinks us, and if we swirl down the toilet and go out of business in 5 years because of that, or 2 years, and that's...
Yeah, I don't see that happening either. No, no. I don't see
that.
Well,
how do you feel about them?
Well, I guess I see that the place where a pedal assist bike might work is in an aging population.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you're getting somebody and in their 70s and 80s and even above, who still wants to stay active and is willing to pedal some, but may or may not be able to negotiate certain grades.
And I think that's a fantastic use for them. And even younger than that. I mean, there are a lot of
maybe.
People. I mean, you could be in your 20s and have some sort of affliction that just sort of rules out a regular bike on the kind of ride you want to do. So I think it's a great way to get around.
Right.
And I'm all for that. And maybe I didn't make that clear earlier, and I'm not backpedaling here, no pun intended.
No pun intended.
I'm for the good that e-bikes can do. And I don't want that to come at the expense of a regular bicycle, and I would hate for e-bikes to take over the regular bicycles. And, you know, there is that potential just because they are more techy and more powerful and more trendy than regular bicycles. You know, the bicycle that you have to pedal and work at and to an extent learn to use is vulnerable. And I just hope e-bikes can be used for good and not
evil.
Bad things. Yeah.
Not evil.
Yeah. For.
Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah.
So I think you, I don't know if you think that this is true or not, but I believe you started a movement called.
For what?
Well, okay. So the last time we spoke, you had just published
your. I want to join that movement.
You did join that movement. You started that movement. It's called. You wrote a book called Just Ride, and your idea was just get on the bike, go somewhere, go to sleep, get up, get back home, an overnight. And now I'm seeing Adventure Cycling is even doing overnights. Are you still doing that? Are you still recommending that? I know you have a lot of books.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to get around. And you know, you know, we were doing those when, I mean, all it is like a short tour. It's just like a bicycle tour that's less than a day long. And I used to, So and it's camping on your bike. So I used to go camping a lot, and I've toured a lot, and I used to spend a lot of times in the mountains, in the woods, off my bike also. And then I got married and got a job and had to work and became a dad and all that kind of stuff. And I sort of have this, it's not a fear of driving, but I don't drive unless I have to. In fact, I have not driven myself a single mile since in the last 6.5 months. I have not.
Oh, congratulations. I wish I could say the same.
You know, it doesn't mean that I haven't been driven places. I go places with friends, and when we go as a family, my wife or one of my daughters drives or something like that. But I never really took to the car, and I'm not trying to maintain a streak. It's just, I ride my bike when I go shopping, when I go to the stores, when I go anywhere, I ride my bike. And I love riding my bike. And so what was the question again? Well, I think I got off track.
Yeah, we were just talking about overnights.
Oh, yeah, the overnights. And so for me, it was just natural. Like, I'm not going to get in a car and drive 150 or 200 miles to get to the woods so I can be out in nature or anything like that. So I thought, well, I've got the equipment. I've got the stoves. I've got the sleeping bags, the pads, the tents, the headlights, the bicycles, the baskets, the bags, the opportunity. And so I just started doing that. And you know, I couldn't. If you have to go for 3 days, that's a big deal. You know, you have
right.
to like prepare for, you know, what am I going to take? I need to bring my stuff.
Right, my stuff.
But if it's just an overnight, then, you know, it just doesn't really matter. I've gone out there, you know, and I've forgotten my sleeping bag. You know, I've forgotten tent poles. You know, I've forgotten, you know, everything that you can forget, I have gone out there and forgotten. And it's never made any difference. A minor inconvenience for one evening, but I still slept a couple hours, you know, between 4 and 6 in the morning or something. And so it all works out. And you know, and we have sort of promoted that. And, you know, it's generous of you to say that we started it, that we, you know, but I think it's accurate to some extent, but I would never, I mean, at its most basic, it is just a mini bicycle tour, and people have been doing that for ever and ever. And, you know, we started to do it a lot here, and we've done a lot of it here, and we happen to have a forum to talk about it.
Well, that's true. But yeah, it just seems like maybe you just brought it into the realm of people's attention, you know.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you going to write another book?
Yeah, I'm working on one now.
Oh, cool. So wait, so now we're working on a book. You have a new bike you're not going to tell me about. And so since you're a trendsetter, which you don't think you are, I know you think you're more retro than trendy. Do you see something coming up that you actually would embrace as something for your company that you aren't doing now?
Yeah, well, you know, we're going to make a mountain bike, a dedicated mountain bike.
Really?
Not a bike, yeah. You know, but it's just going to be sort of, it's going to fit into the family, I should say. You know, it's not going to have disc brakes, it's not going to have shocks, and it's not going to be a remake of a 1981 Ritchie or a 1984 MB1 or anything like that. You know, it'll
that was a nice bike.
Those were all nice bikes. I know, you know, but you know, there's some things along the way that are available now that weren't available then.
True.
You know, 650B tires for one, and then, you know, I've got this crazy idea about longer chain stays, and I'm sort of running with that. And so it's going to be a fun, good bike. And
when
it'll be good, I think it'll be for early 2019, but okay. We're going to have samples and writable prototypes in 5 weeks, so early July, mid-July.
When you say writable prototypes, who's going to be able to see, where will they be?
They'll be under my butt and under some other butts around here.
Got it.
They'll be,
never mind.
They'll be rolling around the hills and Mount Diablo, okay. Mount Tamalpais.
Got it.
Shell Ridge. Yeah. You know, once we have them, you know, we're not going to keep them under wraps. You know, we're not going to go public with them. But you know, if you come by here, you know, you'll be able to see them and take them out for a ride.
People can come and visit Rivendell?
Oh, yeah. People do all the time. And then we put them on bikes and give them a map to the trails or the roads or whatever.
And say, see you later.
Yeah.
Very cool. Wow, Grant. You know what? It's been a long time since you and I sat down and talked. You said something before, though, that just struck a chord with me. How is it possible that your children are old enough to drive? They were babies when I last talked to you, I thought.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're 29 and 23 now. And
oh, my goodness.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I still feel like I'm 19.
Me too.
How
does this happen?
Isn't that funny?
It's so weird. All right, yeah. I'm going to ask you my three weird questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, what's your favorite food?
Grilled salmon, bacon, and scrambled eggs with avocados and Cholula sauce, hot saucy.
What only you would come up with such a cool plate. That is very cool.
Yeah.
What music do you
have? Them all at the same meal, but that would be one fantastic.
That would be nice. Yeah, that would be a nice, you know, or a buffet, you know, that would be nice.
Yeah.
What music do you listen to?
Almost only Bob Dylan.
That does not surprise me even a little bit. All right.
Other people have skills and talents and stuff, but they don't break through to me.
Do you have any pets?
Yeah, I have a 13-and-a-half-year-old Westie, a West Highland White Terrier named Scouty. She's the best dog in the world. She is the most loving dog. Everyone who meets her says she is the best dog of all time, and they're right about that. And I would just do anything for that dog, and she's the center of the family, and I just cannot say enough about her.
Wow. That's awesome. And she's 13, huh?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, those are three.
Do you have any pets?
Oh, yes. I have a pair of dogs. Nobody's ever heard of the breed. They're called Eurasiers. They are a breed from the 1960s. They were bred in Europe, and a lot of people think they look like a chow, but they don't look anything like a chow if you see one. They are a cross between what we would call a Kijan.
Well, chows are those mean, biting Chinese
dogs, and
these are not
like that at all. So these are a cross between Kijan, is what we would call it,
and
Samoyed.
And
there is a little bit of chow in them, but they are very they're useless. They're just sweet. They weren't bred for anything but companionship. They're what I would call a medium-sized dog. They're between 40 and 50 pounds. I have a pair
Aren't
of females.
They fantastic.
Are they? They are so funny.
They're so loving, and they love people.
The one, it would be all over you. The other one is a little more standoffish. She would like to find out who you are first. But the older one, oh, yeah. Come on in the house. Take whatever you want. Did you bring me any treats? You know, that's her shtick. That's it. Well, this has been awesome.
I am as much a dog person as I am a bike person.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Oh, gosh, Grant, this has just been so nice talking with you. Grant Peterson, Rivendell Bikes. It's RivBike, RIVBIKE.com. If you want to see, and eventually he'll tell me what the new bike's going to be, but we won't let it out on the show this time. When will that be available? When can I go look for it?
January or February of 2019.
All right. Maybe we'll catch up then and we can talk about it. How's that?
Okay.
Thanks. Have a great afternoon.
All right. You
too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, Grant is such an interesting guy. My thanks to him for spending so much time with me.
For more information about what's going on with Grant and Rivendell, you can log on to rivbike.com. So let's take a short break, and when we come back, it's off to Utah to speak with pro rider TJ Eisenhart. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back, and it's off to Utah for a conversation with Team Hollowesco Citadel's TJ Eisenhart.
Hello, TJ. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me today. I understand congratulations are in order.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm super stoked to be here, and especially today after getting engaged to the love of my life on the 5th, which was, Monday or Tuesday?
This is, yes, you and I are speaking on the 7th, so that would mean, how cool is that? How long have you two been together?
September 8th last year. I remember calling my mom actually the next day after meeting her and telling my mom that I was going to marry this girl. And, it was just like, it was definitely love at first sight. You see this beautiful woman and it was just, I just knew instantly. And so it's been an amazing ride. We've definitely had so much fun. And
well, it's very interesting that you say that. I too believe in love at first sight. And
absolutely.
Given your history, I can believe that when you saw her, you knew, because when you were 11, you knew you also wanted to be a bike racer. So, you know your mind, right?
Yeah. I think it's definitely just all about knowing, being comfortable with yourself, loving yourself, and just kind of being so in the moment of life and listening to what each opportunity has to offer you. And I feel like each day we have so many great opportunities thrown at us in life, but we're too caught up in thinking about our future moments or our past moments to really, take advantage of them. And
that's awesome. Let's back up a little bit, can we?
Yeah, of course.
All right. Let's talk about how you really did get started. And let's just real quickly go through the history of TJ on a bicycle. So what I read was you started winning at a really young age, that you brought home a silver medal in the time trial at national levels at the age of 12. Is that true?
Yeah, my family is very competitive and very into athletics. I mean, my sister was a professional dancer who was living in Japan, dancing for like Disney, and then moved to New York and was dancing there. My brother also played college baseball. And so our family's always been very competitive and driven, and especially when it came to sports and team sports. And so cycling really kind of fit me well, and I just loved the competition in it. And first year of going to nationals, was able to get a silver medal. It was definitely a major surprise, but this could take me places, so let's keep riding this wave.
Take us through the process of how you went from an amateur to a pro. I mean, you finished high school early. You decided you were going to go to Europe. I mean, you know your mind. You're like an old person in a young body.
Oh, 100%. No, I definitely have felt like an old kind of person for a while. I mean, definitely know my mind and know what I want. That's definitely 100% sure. When I want something or know I need to do something, I don't ever like really question it or second guess myself for sure. I just kind of go with it. If I'm motivated or inspired to do something, I find whatever way possible to get it done.
So how did you get yourself to Europe? Explain the process of what you did.
So just kind of like always the goal is kind of like going over to Europe and racing. And so there was some interest from the national team when I was like 17, 18. And so I knew that was always going to be kind of a possibility. And so I made sure to be prepared for that by graduating high school a year early. So I really wasn't like going to have kind of the whole high school experience. I was really
you know, traveling a lot for racing, and then also just getting my work done, you know, getting in and out. Just my main focus, like I said, was just to graduate to move to Europe. And so I moved to Europe at the age of 18. I was living there full time with the BMC development team. And yeah, I lived there for about 4 years. I'd spend about 4 months there, 1 month home, 4 months there, and then spend kind of the winters back home in Utah. But,
you know, it's interesting that you chose bike racing as a way to fulfill this outlet you seem to have, this competitive outlet.
Yeah.
It's a tough, tough sport. So you said you were with BMC's development
team.
Yeah, their development team. Did you know Sean Whitey?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known, yeah, me and Sean were very, very close. And because even back then, my first year when I was 18, I was very into, you know, the social media and, you know, promoting all that. And Sean always loved that and always was helping me out. And that was definitely very heartbreaking last year to lose such a close friend and a good person. He definitely was a shining light in our sport, that's for sure.
Yeah, he was. Let me take a moment to remind our listeners, we're speaking with TJ Eisenhardt. He is a pro rider, and we're going to talk about the team he's with right now and sort of what his philosophy is about racing itself. So I know that sponsorship is a big deal in cycling, and holding on to sponsors is a big deal. What do you owe sponsors? What do you think you owe a sponsor? Forgetting just the winning for a second, when you're out there performing on your team, what is it that the sponsor wants to see from you as far as, you know, how you ride or how you represent them? Or
our job is to win in a race. That's our job, you know, and that's like, the, you know, that's why I raced and everything is, you know, because like I said, right now I'm just engaged to the love of my life. Like, I don't travel anymore just for, you know, kicks and giggles anymore. Like, when I travel, I get a race and I go there to win, you know. I don't like to waste my time anymore. I like to have fun and, you know, win, you know, and that's exactly what the sponsors want you crossing the line with their jersey, you know, their names being shown, or, you know, the sponsors want to see they also want to need a strong presence on social media and or any kind of other outlet to kind of get them seen, you know. And like at California, for instance, we had a lot of guys in the breakaways every day representing our sponsorships there. And NBC Sports was having me do some videos. And so honestly, just any way you're getting their name out and you're promoting, you know, a kind of that lifestyle that they want, or just like any good lifestyle that's just promoting their product in a good way, that's all they want.
Interesting. Interesting. One more time, I'm going to remind our listeners we're speaking with TJ Eisenhardt. He races for Holowesco Citadel, which also comes under the Hincapie name. How is that relationship? What is that relationship?
Yeah, so I mean, we just recently had an logo change. The team name is still Holowesco Citadel, presented by Hincapie. But the jersey logo is Tab Citadel. And so Tab Citadel kind of ties in with Holowesco. And Tab is going to be this incredible app that, yeah, should be launching here soon to kind of tie in all your social media outlets and everything to kind of make it a one-stop shop, basically. So that should be pretty sweet. So, yeah, and then you have Hincapie, like I said, who's, you know, kind of presented by Hincapie with the clothing and with the Hincapie brothers, who are the two who, you know, started this team.
Oh, I'm going to follow that Tab app. That sounds really,
yeah,
really interesting.
Yeah, gonna
when
be,
are they going to launch
it? Really great. So,
do you know when it's going to launch?
It should be launching here soon. They're still like fixing all the bugs and everything, that, like, you know, like getting everything all sorted out and getting it ready to launch out here soon. But I saw, you know, they were showing us at California when we did the name change and, I mean, the logo change. They came over and showed us how it works and everything, and it's going to be really awesome. So I think a lot of people are going to love it. So, actually, you can pre-download it now if you go to the App Store, and it's called Tab, and the little logo kind of looks like a little, you know, like bird, like either toucan or, you know, type of bird. So if you go to the App Store and download it, when it's available, it'll download straight to your phone. So it should be pretty sweet.
Yeah, that sounds really, really cool. So most of your racing, most of the team's racing is in the States. Do you have a continental team, or is it all American?
No, of course. I mean, our whole team is diverse. I mean, we spent the whole first of the season in Europe, you know, we were down in Colombia at the beginning of the season. And then we were over in Europe for the whole, like, spring time until Tour of California. And then now we'll go up to Bose in Canada. And then out to Knoxville for Nationals. Then Tour of Utah, Tour of Colorado. And then possibly a race out in China at the end of, you know, end of October there. So, yeah, it's definitely a worldwide. And my team is, like, so diverse. We have Australians. We have Latvians. We have Belarus. We have Switzerland, Cuban, Miami, like all over, you know.
Wow.
Colombians, and so the team is definitely just a great world, you know, great team.
That's good. Well, you can go to the Holowesco Citadel. Well, the Tab Citadel. All you have to do is type in Holowesco Citadel, and the Tab comes up on the top
left. Like I said, the name is still Holowesco Citadel.
Right.
Tab is just the logo change. So on our currency, that's why it just says Tab.
Yeah.
It's just the logo change.
Yeah, and you can see that logo and then probably figure out how to download it from there. Mm-hmm. So how many years more do you think you're going to race a bicycle?
Man, that's definitely – I always think that's a funny question just because, I mean, I would love to race a bicycle until you basically can't, you know. Another 10 years would be perfect, maybe, you know. But basically, thing with cycling or any sport, I mean, you never know what life's going to hand you the next day.
That's true.
So really, it's just take it year by year and take it one day at a time because you never know injury or anything can happen. And so, it's just kind of taking it one day at a time. But
all right.
Definitely, I would love another 10 years or so.
That would be awesome, huh?
Yeah.
And what about your goals for this season? So,
my goals for the rest of the season are right now it's to win Tour of Utah. So I'm really preparing right now for that. And yeah, that's a big goal.
You're in Utah, right?
Yeah. I live in southern Utah. I live in Ivins, Utah right now. So kind of like the Zion National Park area and everything. So I'm starting here. That's where the prologue will be, so it should be awesome.
That will be cool. All right.
Yeah.
Well, do you have anything you want to tell somebody who might come up to you and say, hey, TJ, I want to race a bicycle, and just a youngster maybe, you know, when you started? What would you tell a young person who said, I want to be a bike racer like you?
Find why you ride the bike. Find that true love and that true passion, because it's not – you don't just ride just because you like winning. You know, you have to have something stronger than that, a stronger connection to the bike, because you lose a lot more than you do win, you know. The sport is 99% losing, you know, because, like, only one person can win. It's not like a win-lose sport like it is, you know, in any other team sport. Basically, only one person can win out of usually 200 riders a day. So, you know, you have to have that reason why you ride when those harder times come. So
good answer. All right. I have three questions I always ask my guests. Are you ready?
Yeah.
What's your favorite food?
My favorite food is going to be pancakes by far.
What is it?
Kodiak cake pancakes.
What the heck is that?
So Kodiak cakes is a brand out here in Utah, and they're protein, like, kind of health pancakes, but they're incredible. They're so good. By the mix, but I cook those up all the time. I love pancakes.
I should send you some of our really, really good maple syrup that we tap here in Northeast Ohio. It's the best.
Yeah, that sounds great. That sounds great. I'd love that.
What kind of music do you like?
Honestly, anything. Because, I mean, I'm riding the bike for hours and hours, or driving or traveling a lot, so you're always listening to music. And so it has to constantly be changing, you know, I'm either in a country mood or a rap mood or alternative mood, or, you know, it just really depends on kind of the day or the vibe. I think it's kind of depends on what you're feeling that day, honestly. So you have a lot of kind of favorite music out there. Definitely it's hard to put it down to one.
Last question. Do you have any pets?
I do. His name is Putz, and I've had him since I started cycling. So back when I was 11 years old, we adopted him. A neighbor found him alone in the park when he was just like maybe a month or two old. Someone had left him in a box.
I adopted
him.
He's a puppy. He's a dog. We're talking a dog.
He's a Border Collie / Australian Shepherd. So black and white beauty.
Yeah. Wow.
But I also love golden doodles. I think those dogs are really, really pretty and really fun. So sweet.
Well, you know, life is long. You can have another one of those, too.
Exactly.
Well, TJ, we're going to follow your racing season this year.
Thank you so much for your time and for allowing me to be on the show. I really appreciate it. I hope I answered all your guys' questions. And if anybody else has any other questions, hit me up on my social media accounts. It's usually at TJ Eisenhart. You're on Instagram or on Twitter or anything. And just hit me up for any other further questions. I'd love to. So. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you. You have a great rest of your season, and maybe we'll talk again, okay?
Absolutely.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, TJ. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I want to thank TJ Eisenhart, and a big congratulations to him on his engagement. For more information about Haluesco Citadel's racing team, you can log on to hincappyracing.com. I'd also like to thank Grant Peterson for joining me on the show this week. You know, you can always find out what's going on with Grant at rivbike.com. That's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it, and I appreciate you listening. Remember, you can always find us on Facebook or at Outspoken Cyclist without an E on Twitter. We love your suggestions, and we love your comments. I hope you have a great week. Stay safe, and remember, if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.